Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Boxing Podcast. We are sponsored by 32 Red. I'm your host, Dev Sarni, and with me is a man whose beloved Fulham are due to get absolutely hammered this weekend at the hands of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Man United. It is, of course, Mr. Steve Lillis. How you doing?
Oh, all those good intros, my friend Dev, and then you do that to me. No, I'm not having that at all. I'm not even good. It's one of the few games I've missed this season. The reason being, I can't suffer getting on a train down on Saturday morning from Manchester, where I live, with 3,000 Man United fans.
Yeah, no, I mean, are you optimistic?
No.
No, not at all?
Not at all. It's one of the few games I've missed this season, and I'll be watching it on the TV.
Absolutely, and I'll be watching it as well. As a, you know, I'm a big Man United fan myself, being from Rochester in Kent. So, yeah, expecting a big win from the Red Devils. before we get going, Steve. Three big wins last weekend in boxing. They certainly turned my head. I didn't stay up, as I promised. I needed to sleep, mate. I'm sorry. I know you were up in the studio, but I couldn't do it. So Oscar Valdez got a win. Teofimo Lopez got a win. He hammered Diego Magdaleno, and the Crusher got his belt back. Talk to me. How did you see it all?
Oscar Valdez, I thought, looked really good after a year out. You know, the opponent was tough, if not a lot more. But he is a beast, Oscar Valdez. And him and Warrington is the fight for that division for me. Ooh. They would just meet head on, and that would be the fight of any year. That, you know, he mentioned Josh afterwards, but obviously Josh has got other things he's got to take care of first. He's manned the tree. And if he comes through, that fight's still there. I thought Kovalev was fantastic against Elida Alvarez. Yeah. Barry Jones has always banged on about how Kovalev's boxing skills are underrated. Mm-hmm. And we saw that because he was like, he showed the sort of masterclass he showed against Bernard Hopkins. He was fantastic. But as great as he was, how bad was Alvarez? That was a shocking performance in a first defence. And Teofimo Lopez, I said before the fight, he's the best prospect in world boxing. I still believe he is. I didn't quite agree with what he did afterwards. I mean, some people, like, I know, you know, a lot of people like yourself, they feel we're in the entertainment business and that celebration and are okay, but it doesn't lay well with me. But there's something more about that fight I think we'll speak about later on.
Yeah, save it, Steve.
Talking about Lily.
Exactly. I can feel you gearing up. I think you're almost trying to do your rant within the intro, and that's just not on, Steve. I've got the intro here and it doesn't include your rant, so please save it for later. This week we have a monster show. We've got the man who's set to challenge Josh Warrington for the IBF World Featherweight title. It's Kid Galahad. He's got plenty to say. Then we hear from Josh Warrington. He's also got plenty to say. You're going to love this. We've got a bit of Anthony Yard, we've got a bit of Daniel Dubois, and a bit of Johnny Garton all coming up. Strap yourselves in and enjoy. It's the Boxing Podcast. Earlier on this week, it was confirmed that Frank Warren's Queensbury Promotions had won the purse bid and the right to stage Josh Warrington's IBF World Featherweight title defence against Kid Galahad. An announcement on a date and venue is expected to be made soon, and Steve Lillis was champing at the bit. He got them both on the phone. Here's what the unbeaten Kid Galahad had to say.
Would you like being called Barry or Kid Galahad?
You can call me anything you want.
I'll call you Kid Galahad, because that's your boxing name. Although, you know,
yeah, you can call me Barry, you can call me Champ, you can call me Bump, you can call me whoever you want.
Okay, you obviously don't mind you saying there, you don't mind what we call you there, Kid Galahad. This fight against Josh Warrington might not have been a long time coming, but a world title chance has for you, hasn't it? 10 years of professional.
Yeah. You know, I've been training a lot longer than 10 years, mate, to get to this position. I've been training all my life. And, you know, when the fight's made, when we get in that ring, I won't be denied. I'll do what I've got to do to win.
Why won't you be denied against Josh Warrington? Because he's been the underdog in his last two fights, but he's come through them with flying colours against Lee Selby and Carl Frampton.
Yeah, you know, speaking of Lee Selby, I've just actually been sparring Lee Selby in the gym. He told me a few things. But, you know, before them fights, people asked me, what did you think? And I always said, you know, Josh Warrington always had the chance. I think people, you know, I think his biggest asset is people underestimate him. You know, he's good. He does all the basics well. You know, he's strong. He's tough. He's durable. You know, he's mentally tough. And I think people just look at him and underestimate him when they get in there. You know, he shocks them.
Has he given you a lot of tips, Lee Selby, when you've been sparring this week?
You know, I've supported Lee Selby loads of times, you know, but he's just telling me, you know. But the thing is, you know, before the fight, I'm I personally thought, you know, people, when they looked at him, did underestimate him. I thought, you know, I don't think Selby underestimated as much as Frampton did. I thought Frampton, you know, thinking about everything apart from the fight, Frampton was telling people, you know, oh yeah, what I'm going to do when I win this fight, I'm not fighting Barry, I'm moving up to, you know, I'm vacating title, then fighting Oscar Valdez, then I'm vacating again, then I'm moving to super featherweight, and then I'm going to fight this guy and that guy. All of a sudden, he got battered when he got in there. I think he underestimated him dramatically. Got in there, in the second round, he gave up. You know, Warren's put it on him, and he mentally gave up. And I don't care what he says or anyone else says. When I watch a fight, I know when a fighter gives up, and he gave up that night in the second round. You know, and he just went into, you know, survival mode.
Yeah, that's right. That's a strong accusation to make, though, isn't it? But that's what you believe. You say what you think, you don't you?
It's not what I believe, it's what I know. I've watched the fight, and you know, I've been in this game a very long time, so you can believe what you want to believe. If you don't believe, you know, that's my opinion.
How will you cope then with Warrington and this engine that he seems to have, that's like a Duracell battery?
Yeah, you know, he's got a good engine, but I've got a good engine. You know, have you ever seen me go on a fight and, you know, ever look tired or gas or ever thought, he's gassing, you know? You know, the thing is, I've got the skill, I've got the will, I've got the determination, I've got the mental toughness, you know, to keep him off.
Do you think you can get to Josh Warrington in his head at all, like he might have done to Selby? Because what I'm saying is, during fight week of the Frampton fight, you turned up at his workout. You didn't say anything to him. All your mates went home, back to Sheffield, Billy Joe and everyone. You stayed there just by yourself to the end to look at him and watch him. And you had your few words with Nick Manners there, from what I saw. Then on fight night, you tried to get into the ring. You know, was that part of your plan?
No, not really. You know, at the end of the day, I went to see what, you know, I wanted to just see, you know, just what it was all about. You know, I just wanted to go there and just see, you know, just look at everything. I seen, you know, what he looked like on the pads and everything. I just wanted to just gauge him. When I seen the workout, I knew the way Frampton walked in there. I knew he was going to get beat that night, you know, the day after, just because, you know, he walked in there like, you know, he thought he won the fight before he's actually got in there and fought. Nick Manners, he used to come to this gym a long time ago. And, you know, Nick Manners is Nick Manners, isn't he? You know, he's a master strategist. That's what they say. So, you know, if you want to know about boxing, you ask Nick Manners.
Is there a hint of sarcasm when you say that?
No. Or, you know, Nick Manners is, how can we put it? He's just, you know, he's been in boxing a very long time. He comes to this gym a very long time. He probably learned a lot in this gym. He didn't do nothing as a pro boxer. Got beat up by Joe Calzaghe. But, you know, he might have learned.
And do you know Josh at all from, you know, your boat? I know you're in the same county. You're about 40 miles away from each other. Yeah. Do you know each other well at all? How have you got on?
No, I know Josh from the amateurs. You know, I think I boxed him in my fourth fight, or one of the two. He beat me twice as an amateur, fair and square. He never got robbed or anything like that. He beat me twice as a junior, as a senior. After that, I think I spoiled him a few times. And after that, you know, we never boxed again. You know, I never seen him for years until now. But I always knew down the line that, you know, I'd end up fighting him again.
And why are you the man to beat him?
Why am I the man to beat him? Because I know mentally I'm on a different level to him. I know I've been trained as an amateur. He could have beat me. I got beat six times in amateur. Just because, you know, when I was in the amateur scene, it wasn't, you know, my goal wasn't to be, you know, a gold medalist or anything. My goal was to be a professional world champion. So from the get-go, from the amateurs, I always trained like a pro. So, you know, with the times I did get beat, I got beat fair and square. Just people, you know, pointed me, or they just jumped on me or whatever. But, you know, this is professional boxing. This is different. This is like a chess match. It's a completely different game. I've got the best team. You know, I've got the best team, I believe, in England, you know, in terms of the professional game. You know, I've got the Ingles. I believe my team is better than his team. We've been in this game for a very long time. So, you know, when we get in that ring, it's all going to show.
Do you think it'd be different for him, the pressure this time, because, you know, he was the underdog against Selby? You know, a lot of people didn't fancy him against Frampton. Now, all the great, I've seen you, I know how good you are. As boxing people, a lot of boxing people know how good you are. But to the casuals, he's going to be an overwhelming favourite, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's just how it is, I think when he boxes himself and even Carl Frampton, people underestimated them, he was underdog for both of them. And he went in the, I think to the people who knew boxing, he wasn't an underdog. But to the public, that's the public, public, most people who watch boxing don't actually know nothing about boxing, so it doesn't really matter what the public think, their opinion, or, someone could be, the best or whatever, but really they're not. But what does it matter? At the end of the day, you've got to go in there and win, and that's all that matters.
How dark was it for you 4 years ago when you got that ban initially for 2 years that was cut down? How did you ever think then, did you think at that stage, I'll have enough of it, I'm going to find something else to do in life?
No, because I got nothing else. This is my bread and butter. I don't have no education. I'm not no dental technician. I ain't got nothing to fall back on. So, when I fire it to the death. That's just how it is. I ain't got nothing else. So, when he gets in that ring with me, I think this done about making the fight in May. He's going to be finding a completely different fight to all the fighters he's boxed in the past.
I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to ask you. Are you going to thrive on the hate in Leeds that night when you're booed?
Yeah, listen, it doesn't really matter, does it? No. At the end of the day, a fight is a fight. It's nothing personal. Emotionally, when I was a kid, I'll tell you a little story. When I was a kid, I was always in and out of trouble. And I had to go and see a psychologist one time. He turned around and told me, he says to me, they diagnosed me and my three brothers with, I think it might have been, sociopaths.
Sociopaths.
Yeah. They said you're a bit emotional. There's not much emotion. So, when I get in that ring, I don't really think, whatever happens.
Give me a fight prediction. How are you going to win and what round, or is it going to be points, shutout? Because I think you've already lost a round.
Listen, it's not going to go to points. He's going to walk onto a shot and he's going to get hit very badly. The referee's probably going to jump and save him. In fact, I think his dad, is it Sean?
Sean O'Hagan, his father, yeah.
He's the one who's going to stop the fight. Because he's going to start making emotional decisions. He's the one who's going to throw in the towel. I'd say round 6, 7, or 8.
Well, some bold predictions there from Barry Awad, a.k.a. Kid Galahad. Bold predictions that are making Josh Warrington giggle.
Josh, thanks for joining us on the podcast. We've listened to Kid Galahad speak, and he thinks there that on the night, your dad might get too emotionally involved and could hook you out around the 7th or 8th round. What do you say to that?
I'm not sure about that. It makes me giggle that, it's funny how these scenarios get drawn up. I mean, the guys, they're not in touch with reality. They just have this, you have ambitions, you have desires, you have maybe a little image of how you think the fight might go in your head, but he's talking daft. He's like picking certain rounds when your dad's going to pull me out. Listen, I've been in with the biggest of hitters. I've been in with switches. There's never been a time when I've been looked that frustrated that I need to be pulled out, that's for sure. It's a 12-round fight, and I don't really know what to say to that. I'll laugh.
I think he needs to know your dad a bit more than that. The way your dad goes on it, he must be harder on you than anyone he trains.
Well, this is it, exactly. And if anything, let's just say for argument's sake that I was getting chinned by somebody, not Barry, because Barry's not going to chin me, but say if I was getting chinned by somebody, he wouldn't pull me out. He knows what I'm about. I've sparred with middleweights and gone toe-to-toe with them. And, lesser trainers would have probably pulled the man out and said, oh, that's enough. But he encouraged me to go on. So he ain't about to start pulling me out and, he's going to get hurt because he knows that I'm more than durable and capable of standing with any of them. So, yeah, it's just crazy assumption, is that crazy?
How different is it going to be for you this time being the favourite? Because people in boxing know that he's good, but to the casuals, they've seen you beat Selby comfortably. They've seen you do a real number on Carl Frampton, that is. They're going to expect you to walk through this guy, aren't they?
Yeah, of course, and tides change very quickly in boxing. you know, 12 months ago, you know, I were at a level and that's as far as I'm going to go. All of a sudden, I'm now the fans' fighter of the year. I'm the most improved. I'm capable of stopping any, being any guy in the world. I should be in the top 10. So with that comes a lot of expectation. Like you say, I'll probably be going into this fight the favourite. But, you know, it, building up, Steve, you know, when I won the British, when I won the European, and when I had all them fringe world title, you know, fights with Amagasa, Patrick Ireland, Kiko Martinez, Dennis Seeland, Joe Buckner, I was always the favourite going in because I was at home. And I used to, like, laugh to myself because people had just thought I'd walk over the fights, but I was still under no illusion. I was still somebody there in the opposite corner wanting to try and beat it, and you can't take your half the ball. So I'll go into this fight just like any other, 100% focused and looking to do a job.
How well do you know Kid Galahad? Because I know you beat him twice in the amateurs as juniors.
You get to know people in amateur circuit, especially in your counties. So obviously both of us boxing out of Yorkshire, normally in the schoolboys or the junior MBAs or the boys clubs. You'd see each other at shows and then you progress through the Yorkshire rounds and you know you'd see each other Yorkshire versus Midlands and then Yorkshire Midlands versus etc. And you know, used to see Barry along the way, and we did a bit of sparring together as well, if I remember rightly as a kid. And he was always a very approachable guy, a very humble guy, well spoken. His mum sometimes used to come along to the gym. She's a very nice person, but last few years it seems to have gone out the window and it's changed. In fact, I remember last speaking to him 2014 at the Boxing Writers Awards when he got awarded the Young Boxer of the Year, and we had a bit of a chat there. Anyway, like I say, Writers Reign, and then that happened with him getting caught with the test, and since he's come back, the way that he's reacted is like a complete prat, really. and it's funny because, I mean, I'm not saying I know him really well, but for me, it's as though he's trying to put on a certain persona. I don't know if he's trying to blag the fans, trying to blag himself, trying to blag opponents. I'm not too sure what he's trying to do. But if he's trying to build a fan base, it's not fucking working, because last time he boxed in Sheffield, you know, there was hardly anybody there. If he's trying to rumble opponents, I don't think he rumbles them. Like when he was giving Carl sticking, I don't think Carl was particularly rumble. It's annoying, and I don't think he sells either. You know, you normally start doing that when you back up, or you've done something really. And yeah, he won up to European level at the super bantam, but since he's come back, he's not beating anybody in featherweight to start winning all this. He's kind of he's lost a lot of respect for himself. In the way that he's behaved, and especially with that drug stamp scandal as well.
Yeah, well, he's back now. He also seems to think that what's crucial, he's got a better team around him than you have.
Right.
Would you, right. Dominic Ingle, just think he thinks they're a better team than you have. Do you think a lot of it, you get people because your dad's never been one to call publicity, he just goes about it. Yeah, I know he's an extrovert character. He goes about it quietly, you know, in his own way. Do you think a lot of it, certainly, you know, he's never really gone out to get media attention? It's come to him, hasn't it, as such?
Yeah, many times throughout the years. It's only now he's started to do interviews, you know, building up to throughout the years, British, Commonwealth, European, and like I say, the many defences at the arena, Leeds Arena, with the international title. You know, there were lots of chances for him to speak to media then, but he'd always shy away from it. Probably not even shy away, just didn't want to be minded so much with all that going on. He thought that it should be for me and that's it. And he didn't really want any limelight himself. And I think now he's got to a stage where he probably can't help it, where there's that many wanting to speak to him and congratulate him on his success. And a few of the other team members have said, listen, you need to, you know, just take the applaud, you know, be proud of what you've done. And yeah, I mean, the statement of you've got a better team, it's a little bit childish, it's all that stuff. It's like, well, I've got this, I've got, you know, it's child playground stuff. I've got a better team than you, or we've got a colder gym than you. You know what I mean? It's absolutely ridiculous. What matters is, you know, is we know as a team, we get our job done, and on the night, turn up and do the business. You know, he can spout how much he wants about names, reputations, whatever, who he's got in gym. I've heard it all before, I've seen it all before, and end of the day, when the first bell goes, it's me and him, and you see, we'll see how special this team is then, in between rounds.
After this, I mean, obviously you wanted the big fight, you wanted Oscar Valdez, who came back and retained his title in good fashion last week. You know, after this, surely, I know this wasn't the ideal fight for you after France. You just want big, big unifications. So after this, are you just going to plough straight on until the next mandatory in 12 months and get what you can out of it?
Yeah, definitely, mate. Definitely, that's what I'm all about. And, you know, after beating Selby, we'll straight into that big fight with Carl. And if I could have it my own way, then it'd be Santa Cruz or Valdez. You know, I want to fight the best, and As a world champion, you've reached the top of the tree. Why do you not want to test yourself against the other fighters and prove that you're the numero uno, the number one? I want to be like number one ranked in the Ring Magazine rankings. I want to be, you know, the unified champion. I want to win all the belts, and they're all in touching distance now. And after the last couple of fights, I've made a confidence just through the roof. I believe I can beat any of the other featherweights. So, whilst, you know, I've concentrated on Barry, in back of my mind, I know, get that one through, then, you know, it's on to another one of the world champions. And that's how I'd have it, Steve, you know what I mean? I'd have champion after champion after champion. That's how I'd want my career to pan out.
I guess you could have gone for Valdez now, but is he really want to fight you when you've not got, you'd have maybe had to give up a title, so he's not going to fight you without the title, would he, straight away now?
Well, it kind of takes a gloss off it as well. And
yeah.
I've worked hard for that title, and, you know, as a champion, you don't really want to just, you know, give up your title and walk into another world title fight as a challenger when potentially you could go into that same fight as a champion and, like I say, unify it. And, you know, there's not been many unified world champions over years from UK. So, you know, it goes from Josh Warren, and he's only going as far as British level, to Josh Warren, the unified champion. And it's in touching distance now, Steve. And I've set my goal as I want to make it happen.
Yeah, and you beat Kid Galahad, and then those fights are still there, and you've made probably increased your worth in those fights as well, because you've beaten
definitely,
your mandatory.
Definitely. And you're going into those fights as a champion, then it's worth a lot more as a unified champion. And then you've got a couple of belts, you know, you can do whatever you want. You've got options to give up one belt and go down another route, or it opens doors, makes more appetizing to the other champions as well to come and fight you. You've just got so much power and dictation.
Steve, Warrington versus Galahad. Talk to me, where's your head at with this?
Oh, it's an all-British world title fight. There's needle between the pair, although they knew each other as amateurs. You know, it looks like one of those fights that could develop like a Lee Selby-Josh Warrington fight, where by fight night, the disdain for each other is genuine and there's little chance of them making up afterwards. I just got a feeling that's the way it's going to go in the build-up. And for Josh, he's in a situation he's never been in before, really, in a major, major fight. Mm-hmm. Lee Selby, underdog. Carl Frampton, okay, not as big an underdog, but most people, a lot of people fancy Frampton to win. Now, Boxing people like ourselves know Galahad's a good fighter. Barry's a good fighter, 26-0, hardly lost a round in his career. But to the casuals, well, this man's destroyed Lee Selby, who was being spoke about as the number one in the world. He's hammered Carl Frampton, or, you know, really hurt him as well. You know, this guy must beat Barry Awad, Kid Galahad, whatever he wants to be called in any words, call him what you like. So he's in that situation where people are expecting him to win. Number two, he wanted and was expecting a big unification fight.
Yeah.
Against Valdez. That's not good. That obviously can't happen because of this mandatory. You know, why would Valdez defend against Josh Warrington if Josh Warrington hasn't got a title? The only way that fight could have happened was Josh giving up his title. So Valdez isn't going to face him with no title. It's madness, and who can blame him? So, you know, we're now looking at Josh Warrington. Josh, you know, when the pressure's on you, when you're expected to win, how do you approach this fight? It's a fascinating fight. I fancy Josh Warrington to win, but, you know, Galahad's a good fighter. I mean, his best wins are people like Jazza Dickens and Tokan Clary. Wasn't a bad win at all. This is the first time Kid Galahad's actually fought at world level.
Well, that's just it, Steve. But also, you've got to think, before Warrington fought Selby, people were asking the same questions. They're saying, yeah, but, you know, his best win is Dennis Seelen or whoever it was at that point. Until you fight at world level, you can't say, you can't really say, you know, but his best win is this and that. This is Barry's chance, in a sense. And no, he's a slippery fighter, as Kid Galahad, and it could be a bit of a banana skin. I still fancy Josh.
It is a banana skin in the sense that you just said he's a slippery fighter. Like a lot of those fighters who learnt their trade in Sheffield with Brendan Ingle, they're on the board of the Who Needs Them club. And Kid Galahad is right there. So he knows this is most probably his one chance he'll get at a world title fight. If he loses, even if he loses narrowly, who's going to want to fight him unless it's a mandatory? Nobody. So he knows this is his one chance. And look, you know, he'll take it, and good luck to him in camp. It's just a shame that, what is a shame I'd like to say, is that Brendan Ingle isn't around for this night, because it was Brendan who nurtured him. And, you know, when he was totally out of hand as a kid, Brendan, who got him in that gym in Sheffield and taught him a lot more than boxing.
Very well said, Steve. And what about the wins that Warrington holds over Galahad in the amateurs? Will they play any part in this? Is it something that's going to be in both of the fighters' psyche? Is it something that they're both going to sort of be like, yeah, but I've already beaten you? And, you know, that kind of thing. How do you think? Does it play any role?
No, because they were just juniors at the time. They knew each other on the county circuit. They barely remember sparring with each other. They used, you know, when you're in, you're an amateur, it's a lot of it's at regional level, county level, and you're travelling around to tournaments. You're seeing the same faces in competitions. I don't think it means anything.
Well, it's one that we're definitely looking forward to, and I'm sure there'll be an announcement soon on the date and the venue for that fight. There's two undefeated Brits in a world title fight, both from Yorkshire, and I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to. BT are probably going to do one of those face-to-face things where they sit down and slag each other off. This will be great because, you know, Kid Galahad really goes for it in his slagging people off. And Warrington, if he's riled, as you saw in the Selby face-off, he really goes for it as well. Not so much so in the Frampton one. That was very friendly. That was like, oh, you're good at this. And Frampton's like, yeah, you're good at this. You know, just kind of highlighting each other's strengths. But Galahad and Warrington won't be any of that. That's going to be nasty, isn't it, Steve?
It is. And Warrington, you know, Josh has got that baby face and he's a lovely fella, but there's a nasty piece of work in there when he needs to be. You know, you see that in the ring. And we saw in the Selby fight, you know what a lot of the Selby thing boiled back to? When they were both with Matchroom, Matchroom have a barbecue every August where they invite all their fighters and the press and stuff. Mm. And they was at this barbecue 4 or 5 years ago, and I think Josh said hello to him, and Selby, he saw what pretty much Selby blanking him, not wanting to know him, and he got it in his head from them.
That's great, isn't it? Little seeds are sowed like that, just like someone did say hello to you.
Yeah, so these two got on okay as amateurs, but I just said at the start of the segment of the pod, I can see this going that way. And as you say, John Rawling will earn his money when he's presenting that for BT. And you know what's even worse? I won't get an invite and you're jibbing to watch it. your role as Frank Warren's head of media. That's a liberty, Sarnie. That's a liberty. I want a ticket.
Little sneaky picks here and there. I'll do what I can. I'll try and get you in, Steve. I'll try and get you in. We're looking forward to it. On February 23rd, 17-0 light heavyweight sensation Anthony Yard returns to action. Now, he was scheduled to fight Mehdi Ammar, a former European champion, but unfortunately, Ammar has had to withdraw with injury. Richard Hubbard caught up with a philosophical Anthony Yard.
Mr. Anthony Yard. Now, yesterday we had news, but we have a new opponent for you, February 23 in Leicester, Travis Reeves. First of all, just get your thoughts on that.
For me, it's just a fight, another opponent. Nothing changes.
Obviously, your first one was a former European champion, Mehdi Ammar, which people saw as a decent sort of test for you. Travis Reeve, obviously you and Tunde will have had a look at it. Do you see a similar sort of test there?
Well, I haven't had a look. Again, that's just me being honest. For me, it's another opponent. Every opponent that I've been given so far, I haven't questioned it, I haven't challenged it. Put them in front of me. That's it. I've got a job to do, and that's to go out there and perform the best I can. There's no perfect strategy to getting where you want to get to. You have to work hard. You have to be prepared for whatever comes, and that's my job. That's what I'm doing. Opponents don't really matter.
I suppose from your point of view, A, you want to win. B, I suppose you want to actually continue to make statements in the ring, and you've done that well in quite an emphatic way up to now. A continuation is what you're looking for?
Most definitely. And again, this is just a the things that people need to understand. At this stage, when you get someone like the caliber or the level of the Aymar, you know, there was some people still saying I'm fighting a nobody. People that know a bit more about this sport were saying this is actually a challenge. I was surprised because we've tried to make these kind of fights before with similar opponents and they don't want to fight me. I'm not questioning his injury or anything like that. That's what I've heard anyway, he's got an injury. That's not something I can focus on. I just got to focus on whoever I'm fighting is to be ready.
You've encountered a similar sort of thing probably right from when you started boxing in the amateurs. As soon as you started punching people out, I mean, essentially in the amateurs you ran out of opponents. As a professional, you've had opponent changes quite a lot. I mean, it has been a problem.
Has it? I wouldn't say it's been a problem. I'm doing my job, that's it. And sometimes you have to just let nature run its course. How things are going is how it's meant to go. Again, my job is very simple. Work hard, be ready for when you get in the ring. Opponents change all the time. People have world title fights. And then look at Gervonta Davis recently. Again, the opponent changed. He has to still go in there and do his job. It's happened countless amount of times, even at the top level.
I think what we do know this year is that given the progress you've made, you are closing in on a world title shot. You're very highly ranked in the WBO, so it's no secret that would be the road you're going down. The world title's changed hands again, but you say it didn't make much impact on you, that fight.
Everyone's different. You know, some people really focus their energy and give everything to a particular individual. As you just said, titles change hands again. So really and truly, I do look at the world champions and say the kind of level I need to be at. I need to be at a better level than that. But other than that, I'm not actually focusing myself on one destination or anything like that. It's just, I see it as an overall. I want to become world champion whenever the time's right or whenever the opportunity, not really the opportunity, but whenever the right time presents itself, we've got to go in there and take it, no matter who it is that's holding the belt. That's my mentality. It could be a Mike Tyson holding the belt. When that time's right, I need to go in there and do my job. And again, I use Mike Tyson as a standpoint because, again, he was at the pinnacle and he's somebody that, you know, changed the nature of the sport. So that's what I mean with my mentality is it don't matter on the other individual. It matters on the timing and the preparation that goes into it.
The fight, of course, I was talking about was Sergey Kovalev reclaiming his title from Eladio Alvarez at the weekend. Now, that's a fight, but didn't tempt you to staying up through the night?
I just forgot about it. Literally, it's not really my focus. I've got my own fight to deal with less than 3 weeks from now. So me worrying about another fight that's going on, it's not really my style.
Of course, I mean, the original fight you went to. So, I mean, on the basis of that original fight, the evidence that you saw, Alvarez and Kovalev, did you feel that Kovalev could rejuvenate himself and bring it round?
Almost definitely. I said it in the interview. It depends on what Kovalev shows up. You know, he was winning the fight before he got stopped, the previous fight, and it happens in boxing. You know, he got caught with a good shot and then got finished with even better shots. He was winning the fight before the stoppage, so it depended what Kovalev came back. The guy he fought Alvarez ain't not Andre Ward. Andre Ward fought him the first time. It was a close decision and then he went out there again and stopped him. You know, it's just different caliber of fighters, but I did say that Kovalev can go in there and do it. He can outbox him, he can even stop him, or he can get stopped again, depending on the mentality he goes in there with.
Kovalev v. Yard's got a nice ring to it, wouldn't you say?
I feel like any world champion versus Yard has a nice ring to it. I feel like a better ring is Yard world champion.
Absolutely. On the subject of the world champions, I mean, you mentioned Mike Tyson there, but the light heavyweight world champions, they're almost like all Eastern European Mike Tysons. I mean, they're all the beasts from the East, aren't they? If you go to them, is it Gvozdik, Bivol, Berterbiev, and now Kovalev, all beasts from the East, and now we've got the beasts from the East of London wanting to join the party.
I don't know about all that. I feel like you're giving people titles. I don't know about all that. There's one beast from the East, and that's Anthony Yard. That's the thing that's stuck onto me from when I was young. I'm from East London. I've always had that kind of mentality of just being, when it comes to fighting or anything like that, just being savage, winning at all means necessary. Again, these champions in the division are doing their job. They're very experienced. They're going out there and performing. once my time comes, everyone's going to see a bit more excitement in the division. I feel like the division is very boring at the minute.
You may call it boring, but I mean, it's a formidable division in terms of opponents, isn't it?
Almost definitely. You've got up-and-coming fighters that's looking that are looking very good. The current world champions, again, titles are changing. I remember when Mike Tyson was in prison and he said that he's ashamed. The titles are changing hands like no one's business, and he didn't like it. So every world champion wants to go in there and unify. I'm sure Kovalev will have, because he's coming at the end of his career, I'm sure he would want to go and unify now. So again, you're going to see a lot of interesting fights. And, you know, I'm very close to being in the mix.
Do you ever sit back and sort of just take stock of just how far you've come, though?
Literally, every day. Every night before I go to bed, every morning when I wake up, I just say, thank you, God. I'm sure everyone knows about the powers of God. God knows what I'm talking about. I say, thank you, God. I'm very, very appreciative. Sometimes I thank people around me as well. I'm like, thank you, like, for dealing with me when I was moody that day. Or I thank Tunde sometimes. You know, thanks for just having a bit of understanding when I came in the gym a bit moody. Or I thank my mum. Thank mum for dealing with me when I'm talking back or whatever, or I was going through a particular time in my life. You know, you stuck by me, you spoke to me, etc. Sometimes you just have to give thanks and be grateful for where you're at. Even if you're not in a position where you want to be, you have to be grateful, because there's people far, far, far worse off than you. I always say this to people, stop moaning, stop complaining. People talk about bills where 9 times out of 10, they put themselves in that predicament and they're blaming somebody else, or they're blaming the system, or they're blaming something other than themselves. My friend the other day was saying that they're broke, they had no money, they're in debt. I said, who done that? Look at the car you're driving. So why are you in debt? Look at the phone you have. Why are you in debt? I'm sure you're on social media looking at Instagram. You're able to message me because you have an iPhone. You've put yourself into debt. So sometimes you need to just own it. Take responsibility of you've put yourself into problems. And then again, when you finally get yourself out of that situation, learn from it, don't do it again. I feel like it's a journey of life.
That attitude would have served you well back in December when you went over to LA and you suffered the disappointment of having a fight snatched away from you right at the last minute. Won't go into it too much because, I mean, you've said before how much of a disappointment it was, but you took the positives out of it, and surely one of the big positives was seeing the sense of occasion out there, a world heavyweight title fight, the Staples Center, LA. Talk us through it a little bit, I mean, the impact it had on you.
Again, great occasions for me always inspire and motivate me. That was a historic moment in boxing. Two undefeated heavyweights, both in their prime, going at it. And again, the fight spoke for itself. The highlight of the fight was Fury getting up from the last punch, the last knockdown in the top round. I feel like that moment will be spoken about forever, or for as long as boxing exists. Again, I was able to be there, be a part of the occasion, again, as you said, until the last day. But again, I still took it as like, I fought on the show. That's my mentality. I got there, I trained for the fight, just like I was gonna fight there, etc. So in my mind, I experienced the whole situation. And it just motivates you to tell yourself, when you get to that stage, be prepared. Everyone wants to be a winner, especially on an occasion like that.
Well, that's Yard versus Reeves on a bumper card from the Leicester Arena, February 23rd, live on BT Sport. Get yourself down there if you're in the area. You've got your British super featherweight champion Sam Bowen on the card. Leon Woodstock's on there. Sam Maxwell, the GB amateur who fought Lomachenko for £400. He's on the card. He gets a crack at his first title. He's going for the WBO European. Nathan Gorman's on there. And hopefully Daniel Dubois will be watching Nathan Gorman and then, you know, like tweeting about him and stuff. That'd be quite good. And Tommy Fury, you know, Tyson Fury's brother, he's on. Willie Hutchinson, Scotland's only ever amateur world champion, he's on. The list goes on and on. Get yourself down there. It's Feb 23rd at the Leicester Arena, and it's live on BT Sport. On March 8th at the iconic Royal Albert Hall, 9-0 heavyweight prospect Daniel Dubois takes on former Nathan Gorman opponent Razvan Kajanu. Richard Hubbard caught up with the man they call Triple D.
Daniel Dubois, how does it feel to be hitting double figures as a professional? And it's going to be at the Royal Albert Hall.
Amazing. It's good. I'm excited about this one. And to be kicking off this year fighting at a good venue like this one. You know, many good fighters have fought in this venue, and I'm very excited to be on that list.
I mentioned to you earlier, but for two Christmases running, you've lost a fight by KO, but not inside the ring. I mean, two hefty bouts of man flu have put you down over the last 2 years.
Yeah, it happens usually this time after the... since the last maybe 5 years or so, but we've just got to work around it.
Yeah. I think in future, you maybe not put yourself down for December.
Probably just getting as many fights as before then, and yeah, trying to avoid it.
Your opponent, who you were due to fight in December, Razvan Kujanu, I mean, his journey wasn't wasted because he ventured up to Manchester to fight Nathan Gorman, who lost his opponent. Now, you've seen at least parts of the fight, so, I mean, what were your impressions of it?
Wasn't the greatest fights. Stars make fights, and, you know, Gorman got the W, most importantly, and it wasn't an impressive fight. I wasn't impressed, but... you know, it's another win and it moves us closer, you know, to a possible showdown.
Do you think your power over and above what Nathan's got is the key in this fight?
Definitely, that's going to be a major part. It's part of my attributes, my power, my speed, and my experience and the way I live, really. That's got to come down to how I think and how I fight.
You had to show patience in your last fight, so you kind of know the experience that Nathan went through. Has that made you probably more eager to get an early one this time, a big statement finish?
Yes, it's definitely made me know that I've got to pick up where I left off. I've got to rectify some of the things I was doing and be more diligent and, you know, think a bit more about what I'm doing. So, yeah.
We're obviously talking about Kevin Johnson, who took you 10 rounds in Leicester. Probably a factor in that fight, which I think you acknowledged afterwards, was the need to show a little bit more variety. Do you still go along with that thinking?
Just the need to know, you know, really just know what I'm doing, you know, pay more attention. And you know, Kevin had some things to say after the fight, and I listened. And my next fight, from here onwards, I'm going to... no, definitely going to apply that, and I'm just very determined right now.
What Kevin did say after the fight, or one thing he said, was if you had given him one more to the body, he was out of there. So I bet you wish you had now, don't you?
No, not just that. My jab, and everyone knows I've got a good jab, and just apply it more, use it more. Just use him shots more. Throw some more shots, but yeah, it's all good.
Assuming all goes well on March the 8th, what does 2019 hold for you in an ideal world?
More fights and I'm just focused on being consistent. Whatever comes, but I just want to be consistent and get, you know, good performances and improve after every fight.
We were talking before and you kind of agree, but you're not too far off the big three. Just a solid period of victories and progress, really.
Definitely. I'm not that far off. There's not a big spectrum. It's quite small, really. But, you know, to be at the top, I've got to do everything right, do everything what's... beat everyone who's put in front of me and do everything right, and I'll be there. So I'm very determined to accomplish that right now.
The big three have got people talking at the moment. Now I'm going to drop you in it a little bit here. Before Tyson Fury's fight with Deontay Wilder, you weren't favouring him particularly, and you did think it was a Wilder win all the way. He must have impressed you with the way he went about his job on the night.
No, I thought he had ahead of him. He's a good boxer, and maybe beforehand I was probably thinking like the general public. Oh, he's been out for so long. I sort of bought into the story really, but no, Fury showed what he's capable of, and his movement and his skill, and you know, you have to be a good... there's no one's fool, and he can fight.
Every now and again, you get a real feel-good story in boxing. Johnny Garton's story is just that. This is a guy from the estate who took up boxing part-time, fought in the small halls, and didn't think he'd make it to Southern Area level. In fact, his initial aim was to just get to 5-0. Well, he's now the British welterweight champion. I'll tell you what, you could not be more pleased for him. With Richard Hubbard, here's Johnny.
We're here at the iBox gym with the British welterweight champion, Johnny Garton. Johnny, you know, we've got news today. We finally got in, well, not finally, but we've got an opponent announced for your title defence at the Albert Hall.
Yeah, I've got Chris Jenkins. There was rumours about I'd have Chris. And yeah, I think it's a good, tough fight. I'm looking forward to it.
Might be a fight with a bit of claret on the old canvas, mightn't it?
Well, we both cut easy, so yeah, I'm putting my money on it.
Now, Chris, I mean, he's fought for the British title before at lightweight. I remember having him two epics against Tyrone Nurse. And what we do know about him, he's a tough man.
Very tough. You know, he's been down here sparring before. Even Liam Williams come down. And me and him had a very good spot. It's very tough. So I expect the same on the night. It's going to be a tough fight. It's very energetic. He's a bit of a crazy fella, so it's going to be good.
Not too much technical stuff involved?
No, we're always working on technique. You can't keep plodding forward as I've done the last couple of fights. We know I need to work on things, and we have been, and I think you might see something a bit different from me on this fight.
You're going to start listening, are you?
I don't know about that much.
I mean, you're the most un-iBox type fighter there is, to be fair, aren't you?
Yeah, you've got to say that, yeah.
You've sort of broken the iBox mould.
I've broken the mould, yeah. But I'm bringing the titles back, so that's the main thing.
Absolutely. I mean, for someone who sort of often says a southern area you thought was your ceiling, I mean, have you sat back and reflected on the fact that you've now got that Lonsdale belt in your house?
Yeah, I have. As I say, I still have to pinch myself every now and then to believe it. But, you know, the aim now is to try and push on and see how far we can go, and just want to push on and fight wherever I can.
So when you come into it, your genuine expectations were to fight for a southern area and hopefully win it?
Well, I didn't even think I'd get that far. My aim was obviously to get 5-0 and then work on that, and then I thought hopefully we can fight for a southern area. And when it came off, we won it, defended it, and then pushed on. So now that's what I want to do with this.
Do you think it probably helps coming in with low expectations and then everything sort of after is a bonus?
For some people, for me it is, because I like to prove people wrong, and I like to work hard. So for me personally, yeah. Other people, I think they need to believe they're at the top, and that's what drives them. But for me, it works perfectly for me. Keeps me grounded as well.
Do you think having that outlook maybe leads to people possibly underestimating you?
I think everyone underestimates me all the time. I think Gary did. I think when I boxed Adam Battle, he did. The amount of titles I've boxed for and the amount of people I've boxed, I think a lot of people always underestimated me. And yeah, I always seem to surprise them.
Partly it might be because publicly you play yourself down so much.
Yeah, I don't know if I play myself down. I just think I'm an honest person, and that's what it is. I'm always honest, and you know, if people want to think I'm playing myself down, let them think that.
First defence of the British title that you won so memorably against Gary. What are your sort of off the top of your head your intentions going forward if you manage to beat Chris Jenkins? I mean, are you looking to go down the Brad road of taking ownership, or are you just looking to go where maybe the purses are, which is nothing wrong with that? What's your plans?
You know, I would have liked to have won the British title outright, but in hindsight, I'm probably going to go for the purses and push on for more money and try and maybe get a European title. You know, I'm not getting no younger. I'm 31 there. I haven't got, I don't know how long I've got left in this sport, so yeah, I want to make some money and yeah.
So you're calling out Kerman LaRaja?
If he wants it, let's go.
There is no shortage of fights on the domestic scene at welterweight, and there probably will be good ones that might bring in a few, Bob.
Yeah, well, there's loads around me at the moment, and you know, as I said, I'm happy to fight whoever. I just want to, but if that don't happen, then I'll push on and maybe they can fight me for a European.
How have you sort of adjusted to, well, probably something you haven't experienced before, but now you are the champion, your name is all of a sudden on people's lips and they're calling you out. Has that been a bit strange after being yourself been chasing fights for so long?
Yeah, it is strange, but you know, I'm never going to be short of fights now, so I'm enjoying it and I just go on about my normal day, really.
Let's take you back to the beginning, if you like. What sort of, you know, amateur record did you have?
I believe I had about 30, 35 fights, lost about 10, maybe a few more. So it weren't the greatest. I was even worse as an amateur. I was even more of a slugger. So I used to just have a tear up for 3 rounds. And then I knew, coming turning pro, I needed to change. So, yeah, I remember speaking to Al, and Al weren't overly clean because he knew I got because he knew I got hit too much. But I knew I was the right coach, and I just kept chipping away at him and kept coming back and annoying him. And here we are.
Did you ever think you'd get to the point of making a living from it?
Never, no.
When you entered the professional scene, I presume it was like on the sort of ticket deal, small halls, that sort of thing?
Yes, most of my career, even, well, up to about 2 years ago, it was all ticket deals. If you don't sell tickets, you don't fight. So you earn little money. So I've not really earned any money in this sport. So that's why I'm chasing the purses now.
Did that ever get disheartening?
Massively, but I love the sport. I love boxing. So I always had my job to fall back on. So I was always earning money through work, coming for the gym. So it wasn't nothing new, really. But at times when you do see everyone doing well and earning big paydays, it is a bit of a kick in the teeth, yeah.
What did you do for a living?
I was a mechanic.
Car mechanic?
Yeah.
Is that something you could obviously go back to, I guess?
No, I ain't going back to cars. I can't stand them.
I presume your career sort of took an upward curve, I suppose, when you got to fight for the international title that you fought for at the Copper Box. I mean, that turned into a bit of a war as well, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I just got signed by Franklin. That was another fight they didn't show it on TV. And then where it was such a good fight, they actually showed it back on the Box Nation show. And then from there, I think everyone started taking interest in me now.
You probably came from behind in that fight, didn't you?
Yeah, I was struggling in that fight, yeah.
What happened to that title?
I think I got stripped, from what I believe.
Well, for not defending it?
Yeah, I think I was out of the ring for a bit, they stripped me.
You know, it's when you look back now and you think how long you waited for this British title thing because you were waiting on your own teammate. Does all the wait seem worthwhile now?
Yeah, 100%. You know, probably makes it more enjoyable. You know, you appreciate it a lot more. And I think when I won it, I think it showed in the whole team how much it meant to everyone, especially Brad. He was the first person in the ring.
So he probably, like you say, sent you his laundry bill. just finally, what is it going to mean, you know, for you and your people to step out of the Albert Hall in South Kensington? I mean, we was there last week. I mean, it's an inspiring venue, isn't it?
It's a breathtaking venue. You know, it's not, to me, it don't seem like a boxing venue. It's too nice. Yeah, it's lovely, and I can't wait to get out there and for my supporters to see it.
Steve, whenever I hear him talk, I just want him to do well. He's genuinely such a nice fella.
You know what? He's a terrific fella, Dev, and it's not just us beating the drum for him. As you say, he wanted to get the 5-0 and fight for a Southern Area level. I've done a piece on him for Boxing Monthly coming out. He was saying, you know, once he got the Southern Area, he was going to be content with life. But And when he first turned pro, when he first walked in the gym, when he decided he wanted to get to 5-0, he was taking such a hiding every day from guys like Gary Walcombe, Sam Webb it was, who was a British Super Welterweight champion at the time.
Yeah.
Alan Smith was telling him, I can't take you on. I don't want you at the box. You're not up to it. You know, but it says something about his personality and his manners were impeccable. And he put so much in. Everyone just loved him in that gym. And they looked after him. And he had, what's even bigger credit to him is the way he was raised. His mum brought him up as a single parent. And let's just say he comes from a very well-known family in Southeast London. But he kept his nose clean. And look at him now, full-time boxer. You know, in the day, he can be a full-time dad to his daughter. Absolutely fantastic. You know, well, I can tell you two things. When he turned pro, this is how, I don't like to use it, but how, like, you know, the expectation levels were so low. I only looked at his career because my late friend Dean Powell was managing him early doors.
Yeah,
and there was a Box Nation show at York Hall one night where all Garton's Millwall fans were leaning over the balcony where I was working with Richard Keys, and they were just abusing Keyesy all night. That's what I remember Johnny Garton for. And all of a sudden, he's the British champion, and we're thinking, how far can he go? And him against Chris Jenkins, that is just part of a night of war.
That fight, isn't it?
That's
tell me
Malinda Williams and Garton Jenkins at the Royal Albert Hall. They are wars. You know, if you're not going to buy a ticket for that card, you've got to watch that on BT because you have got two guaranteed barn burners.
Yeah, I'd imagine blood would be shed, and Garton alludes to as much there as well. And he's of the same sort of ilk as Joe Mullinder. I spent a bit of time with both of them at the Royal Albert Hall before that press conference, because there was a promo being filmed, which will be released very soon. But it's stunning. It's them kind of standing in the middle of the Royal Albert Hall, and just, you know, the camera kind of goes around them and they're looking up. And I just think, like, what are you actually thinking? Are you thinking, oh, this is really awkward, I don't want to be filmed? Or is it like, wow, look at where I am. This is amazing. With Garton written across his back, and you just think, wow, what a journey from the estate to this iconic venue. It's going to look really good.
That's right. And the thing, I was talking to Johnny about the Royal Albert Hall, and he was said, can't believe it. His hero, Marco Antonio Barrera, boxed there. And then he was there in, was it 2012, when I think Billy Joe Saunders boxed Tony Hill there.
Tony Hill, done him in 30 seconds.
Yeah, Bradley Skeet was on that bill, and I think Sam Webb was on that bill. You know, the man who used to bash him up, and he was there as a fan supporting them that night. Fast forward 6 years, the next show, or 7 years, the next show at the Royal Albert Hall, he's one of the main attractions on BT Sport. You couldn't make it up, could you?
No, it's a great story, and it's going to be a cracking show coming up. And obviously, you've got Daniel Dubois against Razvan Kajanu, Nicola Adams fighting for a world title on Women's Independence Day. You couldn't even write that. Imagine that. Wow, so that's happening. Marlander versus Williams. You've got Garton in there as well. It's an absolute cracker of a show. That's March the 8th. At the Royal Albert Hall. There are still some tickets available, but just get them quick. And if you're not going to get them, if you miss out, if you're one of the unfortunate few that miss out, then just watch it on BT Sport. It's going to be a cracker. Now, after last weekend's action on Box Nation, you had a bit of Kovalev, you had a bit of Valdez. Teofimo Lopez set the internet alight with celebrations that some people are calling very naughty. Steve, what's coming up this weekend?
Another great fight live on Box Nation this weekend, Dev. We're at the Save Mart Arena, which is in Fresno, California. WBC super lightweight champion Jose Ramirez, who is the local hero, will be making the second defence of his title against Jose Zepeda. You think Ramirez is perhaps the most popular, I say that in the inverted commas, boxer in America, given the tickets he sells in Fresno, because he's a great social campaigner. This week's fight is portion of the tickets going to KO Cancer, because his manager's mother's suffering from cancer. He's got two relatives who died from cancer. He's in a hard fight. He's going to have to bring his A game when he fights Zepeda, who's 30-1, 25 KOs, when the only loss, as you know, they've come against Terry Flanagan on a shoulder injury after two rounds, when before the fight had hardly got going. I think since then he's won 7 or 8 on the spin. He's only been the distance in one of them. Ramirez, he's 23-0, 16 KOs, and last fight he had a really good points win against Antonio Orozco. I think the challenger was down twice, but it was a fight of the year contender, actually. It really was a good fight. Also on the bill is Ray Beltran, who's moved super lightweight for this fight. He's fighting an unbeaten Japanese fighter called Hiroki Okada. For Beltran, he just cannot afford another loss, because last August he lost his WBO lightweight crown to Jose Pedraza, and that cost him a life-changing payday against Vasyl Lomachenko. So he's there to keep his career alive this weekend.
Has he got his green card thing sorted now? Because that was always the story heading into Beltran fights. It was like, oh, he needs to win to stay in the country. Like, is he now there now?
There's a twist to this.
Go on.
He's had his interview. He's been given a passport, some sort of documentation on his passport where he can come and go from America. And he'll have his green card in a couple months, he's been told. Great. It's coming. But his trainer, Marvin Sosomayo, right, a Filipino, he's married to an American citizen. And all he's been doing is going back and forward to the Philippines every so often, getting his passport stamped and coming back to America. He went back about a month ago to get his passport stamped, and they're not letting him back into America. So Brian Valora, the former world champion.
Yeah, the flyweight.
So Beltran Okada is the chief support, and Ramirez against Zepeda, a fantastic world title fight on Box Nation, midnight Sunday.
Ah, so that's the WBC belt, isn't it?
WBC pounds. Super lightweight title.
Yeah.
And you guessed that Beltran or Okada could face the winner.
Stay up. Watch it. enjoy it. It's boxing, it's on Box Nation, it's the Channel of Champions, and they're just delivering every week. Now, Steve, it's that time of the week again, the time I look forward to more than any other. And I've got to be honest, last week, you let me down a little bit. I mean, I was expecting a big rant and rave about something that's drawn your ire in the boxing world. Instead, you just started going on about George Groves' retirement and, you know, how much you'll miss him. It was nice, but come on, I need a fired-up co-presenter. It's how this works. So I've got to ask you, what you talking about, Lillis?
I'm talking about a gentleman called Gregorio Alvarez and Ismael Salas, who you'll know.
The trainer, yeah.
Right. Alvarez was the referee in the Teofimo Lopez Diego Magdaleno massacre last weekend, Dev. A lot's been made of the antics of Lopez afterwards. It's overshadowed even what was a brilliant, brilliant performance. I weren't struck on the way he celebrated the win while the man was still out. That was the big issue with me. As you know, Buncey done his pieces over it. Some people might say it's the entertainment business. Well, I get that, but here's a man who's laying there prostrate on the canvas. But it should never, ever have got that far. Alvarez has been a referee for 7-8 years. No surprise, he hasn't refereed major fights. It's no surprise. How he let that go on beyond four rounds the other night was ridiculous, because he took a shellacking Magdaleno. That was a career-ending beating. And as for Salas, who's had 20 world champions, including Gamboa, Jorge Linares, was over here training David Haye, to let him out for that seventh round was an absolute disgrace. The job of the referee is to protect the fighter. The job of Salas was also to protect his fighter. He should never have let him out for the start of that seventh round. I said that when he came at the end of the back round. I said to Barry, who was next to me in the studio, they should hook him out. Was the word I used. They let him out and he took that belt in. And you know what? This sport is a sport where I've seen fighters badly damaged in the ring, like Gerald McClellan. I've seen men like Steve Watt die in the ring. That could easily have happened the other night, because that shellacking was unnecessary. Teofimo Lopez is a brilliant fighter, by the way.
Yeah, he is a sensation. Let me ask you this, Steve. Do you think there's more onus on the ref or more onus on the corner? Because from where I saw it, the referee, that it didn't feel like there was a really, really obvious, you know, series of unanswered punches up against the ropes, Magdaleno eyes rolling back, that you step in and you stop it. It felt like it would be one of those kind of mercy stoppages, whereas the corner, who knows their fighter, should be like saying, hold on, mate, you're getting absolutely battered here.
Well, to me, I get what you're saying there, but there was shots he was taking in that fifth and sixth round where he was never going to win the fight.
Mm.
You know, the referee's job is to protect them. He could have just said he could stop that to protect him from further punishment. Magdaleno was too brave, and certainly Salas had a responsibility to pull him out at the end of the sixth round. We're not talking a rookie trainer here.
Yeah,
we're talking someone who gets feted in by the media because of his success with boxers. So, and Magdaleno, I doubt he'll box again. And if he does, the first thing he's got to do is give Salas his P45.
Well said. Look, the only thing I say on the referee side of it is it's so strange seeing how differently refs stop fights or deem when they can stop a fight. You look the other week at one of the worst, maybe the worst stoppage I've ever seen in boxing, and it's not Groves Froch. This was worse than that. This was the final round of Andrade against Akhovov. And there was maybe like 20 odd seconds left, and there was a series of punches, but they were blocked, and he went back a bit, but there was nothing there where you just think, oh my God, you need to get this guy out of there, especially with 20 seconds left. And the stoppage came. Whereas you look at this Magdaleno fight, a lot of shots, but the referee didn't seem to be doing anything.
That's right. Look, I just think, I get what you're saying now. The referee's got, you know, you see referees sometimes thinking, God, I can't stop this because he's getting well beat. But you see referees and they're waiting for that one moment. There was opportunities where he could have hooked him in round five. But if anyone, you're asking me who's to blame more, the referee or the corner, I'll go Salas at round six. So that was the question you asked me before I went round the houses 2 minutes ago.
That's all right. I'd lean towards the corner as well. And so this celebration, now this was a real talking point, and you've seen a kind of a video go around of Steve Bunce ranting about it, and you know, obviously he feels very strongly about that, and you seem of that same thinking that what happened there was terrible. Talk me through your thinking there.
Well, my thinking of it, look, fighters celebrate. Dillian White used to do that grave dig celebrate. I don't know if it was a grave dig the other day or hitting a baseball, but to walk right over to the man while he's still laying there when he's taking a horrible belting for six and a bit rounds, that was bad taste. And you saw straight away what was good. Where we've got to give some praise there is Carl Moretti from Top Rank saw that, was straight in the ring and pulled him away. And what I'll say with Lopez, and I'm not going to start slaughtering Lopez as a, you know, he's still a young boy, and maybe he doesn't know. He isn't a 29, 30-year-old man who should know the difference between right and wrong in a lot of situations. Mm-hmm. You know, we know he has these fortnight celebrations and stuff in the ring. And, of course, he has had a career-best win so far and proved what a hot prospect he was. But the people around him at Top Rank, like Carl Moretti, Todd LeBeouf and Bob Arum, will not knock it out of him. They'll have a word saying, look, do your celebration, but just toe the line when a man's still laying there on the floor. That's my big thing. The man was laying there on the floor still.
See, I think I hear you, Steve. I think a lot of this depends on what that gesture actually was. If it was, as you're saying, and as I think I've heard Steve Bunce say, he was like, you know, scooping up the trash. You've said maybe it was a digging the grave gesture. I've seen online people saying he's hitting a like a baseball kind of gesture. I think that the first two are in poor taste. You can't be doing that, especially, you know, people die in the ring. But the hitting away, I'm kind of okay with that. No. But the one question I'll ask is, are more people going to watch him next time? And I think people, the answer to that's yes.
Hey, people are watching because he's a good fighter. So you should be. If you're not watching Lopez, you're not a boxing fan. That's my opinion. While I disagree with you there, Dev, but the baseball gesture, the man was still laying there and he was as good as standing over him. And I'll disagree with you there till I'm blue in the face. We'll keep with this pod going for years and years. You know, we're going to agree to disagree on that one, I think, Dev.
Let's agree to disagree. Good rant, Steve. Love it. Good stuff. It's not just you, you know, saying, oh, Groves is great. That's all well and good, but I love this version of Steve Lillis, the fired up Steve Lillis. So good stuff. Looking forward to it next week. Well, another week, another great podcast. Remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sonny Dev, at The Boxing Pod. And actually, there's a new thing you can do on iTunes where you can leave a 10-star review. So what you've got to do is, if you leave 5 stars and then you log out of your iTunes account and log in on another kind of phony iTunes account, you can then leave 5 stars again. So they add up, and that's sort of 10 stars. So, Steve, do you agree people should be leaving us 10-star reviews?
They should be signing on 25 times and giving us 10-star reviews.
Absolutely. Not that I don't do it already. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.